Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and Andre Kleiner's on the line. Hey, Andre.
Hello, Fred. Good to be here.
Yeah. No, happy Monday. It's a Monday morning while we're recording this anyway. And, you know, there's been, we were just chatting a little bit about LinkedIn and in just the, and there's different forms and questions and stuff going on. One of the things I ran into recently, and I was looking forward to talking to you about this, was this generic idea of, well, we're going to do a Weibull analysis, you know, irrespective of whether it's a Weibull distribution. It's kind of like Kleenex at this point. It's a term for doing statistics.
Doing anything, yeah. It's like the most famous word in reliability engineering.
That's Weibull. Right. So I'm going to take let's do a quick break so we can insert an ad, and then let's talk about Weibull analysis a little bit more detailed.
Hi, this is Adam Barrett of Apex Ridge Reliability. Apex Ridge Reliability is an engineering consulting service that advances your product development with reliability tools, methods, cultural practices, and education to ensure you create mature and reliable products. To learn more, go to ascendoreliability.com/go/apex.
All right. So, Andre, I mean, this concept of Weibull analysis being generic for doing statistics, and I think it also comes coupled with is that I'm going to stick it in some software pack, put some data in some software package. I'm going to get a number out, and it must be good because it's statistics.
And report it to the upper management.
Yeah, saying, okay, make decisions on it, and you know, all that stuff. There's a lot of problems with that.
Yeah, a lot. And in fact, I have my own quote, which was published in one of the quality progress ASQ publications, which says physics always trumps mathematics in reliability engineering. Mm-hmm. And what I meant by this is very often, like you described, yeah, something happens. I mean, we have some warranty return or certain failures in the field, and the first thing you say, oh, go and do Weibull analysis, and like you go and do Weibull analysis, come up with a number and make a decision, right, based on that. And this is not a good approach, because before doing this, I think we need to do a lot of work, or maybe not a lot of work, but some work to understand what's actually happening as far as the physics of failure.
Well, I, you know, in some cases I find that it goes back to very foundational exploratory data analysis. If I get some data, right, I'm getting some field failure data, and it's our first look at, say, after a couple of months of shipping a product to the field, we're gathering up the data and taking a look at it. Nothing huge has happened. Nothing, you know, phone's not ringing off the hook with complaints or anything. We just want to plot the data. And I often, because it's life data, I often go to Weibull analysis, and it's not the end of the game. It's to see what's going on and just to visualize it. I think that's where I think folks get in trouble, is that they getting that first plot and getting a beta of, you know, 0.75 is not the end of the day. It's not the end of the game. It's just the start of asking a bunch more questions. And I think that's what you're alluding to, is in talking about the physics part and understanding the failure mechanisms, that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, I could give you another example. Let's say we have a problem in the field, and this is some manufacturing related problem. Mm-hmm. Okay. So often, like, you get all the data back from the field, I mean, all the units, and start doing the analysis. But what happens if the only certain lot was affected? Let's say it was like certain week where it was something contaminated. Mm-hmm. And now basically you are diluting this data, those failure points with the total population instead of actually doing this with only the subpopulation of the units manufactured that particular week.
Oh yeah, I've seen that exactly. And where my first look at it looked like, oh, we've got a decreasing failure rate. It's working itself out. It's no big deal. The longer they run, the better they run. Until we noticed that it was all from 1 week of production. And then we isolated the data just to that group. And
then suddenly you see something else. Yeah.
Yeah, completely different. It was that week was going to wear out quickly. It was very high beta value. And so it completely changed the results of the analysis or our conclusions. But you're right. If it's what's going on here? Why is, let's look at this four or five different ways. Let's look at it by week of production. Let's look at it by batch. Let's look at it by region of the world. I think that's all important to plot it and explore. I think that's the first step, is the exploratory part. It's not Weibull analysis at that point. It's just getting your hands around the data.
Yeah, and also sometimes what may happen, you have certain sort of a binary data where like you have a defect or you don't have a defect. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, what happens if you have a defect, that unit will fail pretty quickly. But if you don't have a defect, it will basically last like any other unit. And again, the way you analyze or the way you plot those things are going to produce totally different results.
Yeah. But what's the, when I set up accelerated testing or if I'm looking at Weibull plots, I often try to break it down as to the lowest detail that we have data available. So if, like one product I worked on years ago, I had five major subsystems in it. It had a compressor and a motor and a power supply and so on. And the field failure data was broken down to those subsystems. Not a lot of detail beyond that in the data set. And so we plotted it at a system level and we got some number in some graph, some fit. And then we broke it down by the subsystems and it told a completely different story. We had one subsystem was most likely to fail in the first 2 weeks or 3 weeks of the product being shipped. And the compressor had a pretty serious wear out mechanism about 6 months after the warranty expired.
Yeah. So when you analyze them together, you may have like several different trends mm-hmm. on the Weibull paper, and that's why it's very important to separate your failure modes and analyze them separately. I mean,
we looked at it at the system level. We saw this hockey stick kind of approach. It went out for 3.5 years, and then the curve took a sharp jump up.
Yeah, probably when then another failure mode kicked in. That's probably what was happening.
Yeah, so we started saying, all right, let's look at those records for some of these that are this sharper piece, and let's look at some records earlier on, and is there a difference? And it didn't take – all it did was make us ask better questions, and then we plotted it at a finer resolution. Then we got some failure analysis data to help us really sort out what was going on. The hard part I find is that the data sets we often have don't have the physics involved in it. And then we stop. That's all we have. I think you have to get to the failure analysis. You have to, especially field data.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. If the goal, and again, we need to keep the goal like a final objective in sight. So if the goal is to fix the problem, obviously you need to understand the problem, not just kind of project a number and say, oh, I think we're going to be okay or not okay. Because again, that's going to affect your analysis mm-hmm. once you understand the problem.
Well, that is one goal is just to fix problems, to understand them. I think there's also just the goal of monitoring. You know, we put a product out and we're trying to see, are we on track or not? Are we getting what we expected out of the performance? It might be just to identify a problem. Would you use the same kind of analysis or kind of tracking or plotting to identify problems that are unusual?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about kind of monitoring what's going on, there's several aspects to that, because first of all, like, you start getting the data from the field, and maybe that's like early data, and you may not be getting every single unit from the field. Like, I know in the automotive, like when they launch a new product, first maybe few months, you may be getting 100% of the parts back, and mm-hmm. then several months later, you may be getting, I don't know, every other unit, and later you may be getting one out of five units. I've seen patterns like that, and it definitely, once you analyze it like that, your analysis will change. Your curve will not reflect what's going on in the field.
Well, that's true. Yeah, and the hard part there is that the failure mechanisms underlying that, the failures early on in production may be very different than after a product's been in the field for 2-3 years. And so getting fewer samples back makes a difference. But you get the records back, right, that these were replaced or these were returned or repaired or something like that.
Yeah, you get them back. And again, in different industries, it's done differently. And like, again, in the automotive, you get pretty detailed record. Mm-hmm. But I've been talking to my colleagues, and in some cases, you don't. They just get the part back, and you may not even have the information how long it's been in the field. Mm-hmm. Just mm-hmm. get it back, and for engineering analysis, see what's wrong with it. Yeah. So again, it depend in a different industry will give you different level of detail.
Yeah, some get absolutely nothing back, you know. Others, if that have a warranty period, they'll get some, you know, good number of units back when it's financially makes sense. But if my ballpoint pen fails and it's, you know, a $2 for a pack of six of them, and one of them breaks or fails or whatever, I'm not going to bother to return the pen to the store or call the big company and say, hey, this one fell apart. If it was a $1,000 pen, which I imagine there are such things out there, you know,
maybe
if it fails, yeah, I'm going to complain. So I think there's a financial aspect to it. It's familiarity with things. It's different buyers that buy the first products versus the, you know, buy one after it's been in the market for a while and stable and Consumer Reports says it's good, all that stuff. It's, yeah, there's a lot of variables and there's a lot of noise in the data itself. But back to this concept of, you know, the physics part of it is, well, how many samples back and understanding the failure analysis of that is enough to make a decision on? Let's say you ship 1,000 units and mm-hmm. you get 4 units back and they all have a consistent pattern to failure, say is corrosion problem or whatever it is. Is that enough to say, oh, we've got a problem and here's the magnitude of the problem and here's what we need to do to fix it? Or is there more to it than that?
Well, it probably depends on what was the field exposure. If you had like just 1 month or 2 months and you got 4 back, probably I would encourage you wait a little bit longer, because there's a term immature data, mm-hmm. and we know that data basically matures once you're getting more units back. So, but again, if you don't have that luxury and you need to make a decision, you kind of look at what kind of history you've had with this kind of products, mm-hmm. Then you do Weibull curve and see, okay, what's the pattern here? Yeah, we seeing some wear out, which would be a bad news. Then you kind of need to pay a little more attention, or if you see a decreasing failure rate, which is better. But again, you kind of make a decision based on the situation. It's like what the best data you get back and how soon, I mean, how alarming it is compared to other product lines or similar products, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And how fast you need to make a decision.
Well, that's true. That's a good point is, you know, if I got 4 failures out of 1,000 units shipped and put into service, say in the first couple of months, if that was half of what the last 3 product lines did, I'd be like, oh, okay, we're good. Let's take a look at it. It's and realizing that they're all the same problem, then it'd probably be, was that from the same batch or same week or same production site? Or, you know, there, was there some other issue going on there? But in some sense, it's good news compared to previous products. On the other hand, if four is twice the failure rate that we had previously, and they were all the same corrosion issue, I'd probably dig a bit deeper into that and try to understand what's going on.
Yeah, and also it depends on the type of a product, because if it's, let's say, a safety critical system, then you would be treating it totally differently as opposed to it's like a radio or your cell phone, like for example, your airbag or engine controller would be a safety critical system, and sometimes you may get alarmed about just two. One or two failures, and it's like, okay, we need to get to the bottom of this as soon as possible, because I mean, this is serious. I mean,
that's right.
People can get hurt.
Right, right. Whereas if somebody complains that the fitting on the dashboard was a bit loose,
yeah, oh, like you have a noise coming when you play your CD. Yeah, obviously you would treat that thing a bit differently.
Right. It now if it ends up being, you know, a batch or becomes a well, this brings up are you familiar with how the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, identifies an outbreak or an epidemic?
No, I mean, I can make a few guesses, but no, I'm not familiar with this.
Yeah. It's basically a bunch of comparative type stuff. So like the flu season, they typically know, here's the pattern, here's the reporting schedule, we're going to get so many cases per week and this kind of stuff. And they use that as a comparative method to say, all right, here's the pattern we're seeing this year. And if it gets above the expected pattern, then they dive into it and say, all right, it's like we do, is what's the failure analysis of this? And it's if it's a virulent, I think is the right word, you know, very contagious strain of flu, and we're above the normal way flus in the past have typically spread, then they start sounding alarms. They start sending out, you know, alerts to hospitals and doctors and saying, hey, treat this more aggressively, do this or that, whatever.
Oh, yeah, that's very similar to comparing what you're getting from the field with similar products, let's say previous model year or similar model in the field or the same unit in different markets.
Or so even your business plan. Sense. You know, if it's a brand new product, here's our expected pattern. Here's what we think is going to fail and over time and how it's going to behave. Here's our projected Weibull curve, and use that as a comparison if you don't have other stuff. But yeah, it makes it a much more sensitive monitoring tool to detect if something's changing. It's coupled with a very healthy respect for, well, what's failing. Like you said, if it's a safety related thing, just one issue in that general area is enough to spend the time to get really into the details of it. If it's cosmetic and doesn't shut down the vehicle and you still have the functionality and it's still safe, well, then it's an economic decision. How many complaints can we afford?
Sounds like CDC is doing the right thing. And again, that's physics of failure, only they have a little bit different type of physics. It's more like
biology.
Biology.
Yeah, that other science over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's the same idea. Yeah, you need to understand what's going on, not just kind of put the numbers on the Weibull paper and do the curve. You kind of need to dig deeper. That's why I say physics.
Yeah, I made this mistake. There's another way you can really screw up a Weibull analysis is if you Weibull analysis and basic time to failure distributions like log normal, Weibull, gamma, these distributions are really well suited to dealing with time to first failures, right? And if you repair a system and put it back in service, and you got to treat the data a bit differently. It's recurrent data at that point. And so if the... if the vehicle, you're tracking the vehicle overall in its repairable system or a piece of equipment in a factory, running a Weibull analysis on it isn't that terribly insightful or useful.
Yeah, that may not be the best idea. I think we discussed in one of our podcasts where, like, there's a big difference between repairable and non-repairable systems, where mm-hmm. a repairable system is basically what's called renewal process. And it's this different assumptions you make, like when you repair something, it's as good as new. Is it as good as old? I mean, from statistical.
As bad as old. Yeah, I've heard it.
Yeah. As bad as old, or it's like somewhere in between, and which probably will be a correct answer. Mm-hmm. And you, from statistical standpoint, you got to analyze it totally differently. And I've seen too many cases where people just do Weibull analysis and think they're getting right answer, and they don't.
Well, I think it comes from that if you assume that the repair restores your system to good as new. The hard part is if I replace a tire on my car, the other three tires are still old and they have a very different probability of failure than the brand new one I just put on. And the simply assuming that all four tires are as good as new now is where that just doing a Weibull analysis on my tires is going to break down, because that assumption is not true. And I think that's the crux of doing good statistical analysis, is understanding the limitations and using the right tools appropriately. It's way too easy to drop the numbers into a spreadsheet or into a software package, push analysis or get a plot, a CDF plot of some distribution, and going, okay, we're done. We know everything we need to know. Well, no, I don't think so.
No.
Yeah. No, it's a caution. I think it's really a cautionary tale we're kind of weaving here, is that if you're going to do statistical analysis, you're well suited to understand the physics or chemistry or biology of what's going on and use the statistical analysis to ask better questions of what's going on, to focus a root cause analysis or other analysis appropriately, and then vice versa. By understanding how something fails, say from a detailed failure analysis, is then use that to inform what statistical analysis to use.
Yeah, and sometimes you need to push back. If you are a reliability engineer involved in statistics and someone kind of throws you this information, yeah, there's a certain failure data, here's times, go do Weibull analysis, you need to push back sometimes and say, okay, I need to know a little bit more mm-hmm. what's going on. Yeah, if we have like 10 units back, what exactly is happening? Is it the same failure mode? Where they came from, were they manufactured the same week, or it's totally random, and a lot more questions like that before actually doing the Weibull analysis and clicking that enter button.
Yeah, it's just wait. I've had people we're doing a class and we're doing some exercises, and they punch a bunch of numbers into their calculator and they get a number, and it makes no sense whatsoever. But they say, no, that's the answer. And they'll fight for it. And it's obviously they missed a decimal point, their orders of magnitude off and stuff like that. Just because it comes out of a spreadsheet doesn't make it true.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, let's leave it with that. It's physics always trumps mathematics. That's a good quote. I'll have to track down that article and add it to the show notes and see if we can get a link to that.
Yeah, I have that quality progress issue. I think it was like a half of the magazine basically dedicated to different quotes. So I was proud that they posted mine.
Oh, cool. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Send me the info for that. We'll add it to the notes, and it might be an interesting issue for all the different quotes that'd be worth taking a look at.
Yeah, I know. We get the quotes from you, right? Your site sends us appropriate quotes every day.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I have a list that that we put together that that works. Yeah. Yeah, if you want to get on that, it's I'm trying to remember where the link is. I'll have to add it to the notes. It's the reliability quote of the day, and there's an email list that sends out an image with a quote on it.
Okay, that's good.
Stuff that goes out covers variety of different topics, but it's usually something to get your day started. And other stuff available up on Ascendo Reliability, articles and webinars, podcasts, all kinds of good stuff. One of the things, though, is go check it out and leave us a comment or a question. You know, Andre and I pick up on questions that we see on LinkedIn or in different forums or that are sent directly to us. This one on Weibull analysis was basically sparked from getting questions about doing this kind of analysis. And I think, Andre, you've probably gotten more of them than I have over the years, if maybe many of which neither one of us can talk about because of non-disclosure agreements and that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, proprietary information. Yeah. But yeah, I got my share. That's for
but
sure.
It's a general topic, though, and it comes from what we're hearing from folks. So if you've got something on your mind, if this sparked a question or an idea for you, let us know. Head over to reliability.fm, and you can find Speaking of Reliability, and there's plenty of ways there to leave comments or get in touch with us. And we'd love to hear from you. So with that, Andre, I think we'll wrap this up and hope all is going to be well with statistical analysis going forward. I think this podcast will lay that to rest.
Absolutely. Thanks, Fred, for doing this.
All right. Thanks, Andre.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.